Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Hey, Upgrade listeners. Before we get started, we have a request.
Look, we want you to write a review for us. We want you to write a very positive review. Five-star.
Yeah, five-star review.
Five-star review.
Apple Podcasts.
Apple Podcasts right now. Okay, the title of
the
review will be Alice and Melissa Are Changing the Game.
Yes, the first line of the review will be, I knew I loved Lifehacker. I didn't know it was possible to love a podcast just as much.
Yes, and then from there, listen, from there—
You're on your own.
We'll let you take it where you want to take it.
Be creative. Think big.
Yeah, think big. Do it now.
Write a review.
Thank you.
Hello, and welcome to The Upgrade, the podcast from the team at lifehacker.com, where we help you improve your life one week at a time. I'm Melissa Kirsch, editor-in-chief of Lifehacker.
And I'm Alice Bradley, deputy editor of Lifehacker.
And today we're talking about dealing with digital overload. If you're listening to this on your smartphone, you know what a magical device it is. You might be listening while you're checking the weather, or playing a game, or scrolling through your Instagram.
Yeah, that's right. Because of our smartphones and other devices, we're so used to multitasking that we barely notice we're doing it. You're multitasking right now, aren't you? Admit it.
And with that in mind, today we're talking to Manoush Zomorodi, host of WNYC's Note to Self, and author of Bored and Brilliant, How Spacing Out Can Unlock Your Most Productive and Creative Self.
It made me wonder, like, if I changed my smartphone habits, what kind of effect would that have on me, on my brain? What does boredom actually do for us?
So, Alice.
Yes, Melissa.
We have a rule about the upgrade of the week that people aren't allowed to say certain things because we hear them all the time and they are tired and bored. And one of those things is you can't say that your upgrade is drinking more water because that's not an upgrade.
We're all trying to do that. More water.
And you can't say you're getting offline and unplugging and walking in nature more because everybody's trying to do that.
Right. And also, I don't believe it anymore.
Right. But today's guest, Manoush Zomorodi, has actually done the research into what getting offline does for our brains, and it's totally fascinating.
It really is. And it's also not just about just going offline, right? It's about changing your relationship with these devices because we don't have to live with them, but we choose to live with them.
Mm-hmm.
We want to live with them. There's a lot of great things it gives us. So it's a strange kind of addiction that we can't really rid ourselves of.
Right. And even knowing everything that we do know, because every other guest that we have here talks about how our brains are being hacked or how we're addicted to one thing or another, I was still surprised reading her book and speaking with her about how boredom functions in our lives and how we need to be bored. We need to really be bored in order to be creative, in order to get work done, in order to be happy. These things really came to life for me.
It felt like a thing that I knew intuitively but didn't want to believe.
Mm-hmm.
I felt myself resisting that idea as I was reading the book. I was thinking, but I like to be listening to a podcast when I'm folding laundry or commuting. I can't imagine doing these things without having some kind of distraction. But the reality is, 10 years ago, I did those things all the time without distraction.
Right. And your brain has probably changed now, and you are in some way dependent on that rush of endorphins or whatever the adrenaline is. I'm trying to think back to Dr. Robert Lustig and
the dopamine,
the neurochemicals dopamine that he told us about. The dopamine versus the serotonin rush.
Right.
One thing we should say, since we have Manoush Zomorodi here, is that sometimes we get mail from people who think we're funny and listen to podcasts like Pod Save America, where they are hilarious reading their own ads, and they want us to read our own ads.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And we tell them that we don't read our own ads because it's a company policy that editorial and advertising are completely separate.
Right. As much as I want to make fun of Parachute, which, by the way, not a sponsor.
Could be.
Could be one day.
Yeah.
One day.
When we make it big. Regular Upgrade listeners may notice that a few months ago, Manoush and her publisher were advertising on the Upgrade. We just want to make sure that everybody knows that we have no financial interest in having her as a guest on the show. She is here because she's brilliant and she has a new book.
Yeah. And in fact, we discovered she was advertising on the show after we had already booked her.
Which was a nice synergy. So
nice. Yeah.
Somebody's choosing ads that they think our audience will be
and
interested in.
Correct.
Yes.
Better way to cook.
Yeah. So here in the studio, we have Manoush Zomorodi, host of WNYC's Note to Self and the author of Bored and Brilliant, How Spacing Out Can Unlock Your Most Productive and Creative Self.
Manoush, hello.
Hello.
Hi. Thank you for being here.
You ladies, I am so excited to be here. Love, 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 life hacker.
Oh, thank you. We love you.
Yay.
Yay.
We love Note to Self.
We do love Note to Self.
Oh, cool. Awesome. Thank you.
So we're going to resist just asking you questions about how to podcast.
We can do that, too.
How to do.
Whatever you want.
How do you make it go?
How did you become so great at podcast?
How you podcast.
So tell us a little bit about how Bored and Brilliant came to be.
Okay. So it was the podcast, really. I'm going around the country claiming the title of first crowdsourced podcast project to be turned into a book. Do you think I'm going to have a lot of
competition
for that one?
No, I think you're,
yeah, I think
prince,
you're.
I'm the crown. I'm the queen of it. So,
it.
Okay, so here's
take
what
it.
Happened. Really ridiculously mundane story, but I feel like life hacker people get this. Like you sit down, right? This has happened to me in 2014. You sit down, you're like, I have this project. I'm going to kill it. I am this type A person. I'm going to sit down and write out all my ideas. So I had that moment, you know, where I was like, the podcast was going well, but it wasn't like A+, you know, so I wanted to kill it. And I sat down to write down my ideas and there was like nothing there. And it was different than writer's block, you know, because we've all had writer's block and you're like, oh, okay, the muse, she's not here today. Mm-hmm. But this was different. It was like there was sand in my brain. And I started to really think like, what's the problem here? Like, when had I had my best ideas in the past? And I started to realize it wasn't when I, you know, sat my butt down in a chair. It was these fleeting moments when you're waiting in line for coffee, or in my case, waiting to pick up my kids, or just when I used to kind of let my brain space out. And now I realize that every time I had that like little crack in my day, I was filling it with my phone. And so I was like, wow, I'm never bored, ever. And then I was like, wait a minute, first of all, does that mean I've not been bored since like 2009? That's terrifying. But isn't that a good thing? You know, like we're always told like only boring people get bored or, well, of course you don't want to be bored. But then I was like, well, what if we got rid of boredom? Is there sort of an evolutionary purpose to humans getting bored? We've been doing this for millennia. Seems kind of freaky to like breed it out of us within like 5 years or whatever. It made me wonder, like, if I changed my smartphone habits, what kind of effect would that have on me, on my brain? What does boredom actually do for us? So that was the question I posed to my audience. I was like, are you guys curious too? Would you be willing to do an experiment with me?
Look, this is a tech show. I really don't think that swearing off our devices is the solution. You know, thanks to my phone, I can work full time and actually see my two children. And I am profoundly grateful for that. But it's time to figure out how I want my phone to be part of my life, where it fits in. Bored and Brilliant. Let's do it together. Recruit your underperforming colleagues.
And I thought a couple hundred people would be like, yeah, let's do this. But within 48 hours, 20,000 people signed up.
Oh.
And so we embarked in 2015 on this week of trying to understand the purpose of boredom, what our smartphones do to disrupt it, and what the ramifications are, and that the results were quite extraordinary. So for 1 week, we woke up, we got a little mini podcast sort of explaining the neuroscience of getting bored, some of the design elements of how technology is made to hijack our attention in different ways, and we tried to see if it would indeed jumpstart sort of our brain power. And it was actually extremely effective. So the book is based on what we learned during that 1 week. And of course, I've gone back and added a ton of research and more data and the stories.
Yeah. So can you tell us a little bit about that research, about why boredom is so important?
Yeah, it is fascinating. So I had no idea. We are at an amazing moment when it comes to understanding what goes on in the brain when we allow our mind to wander. So it turns out that when you get bored, you ignite a network in your brain called the default mode. Some scientists also refer to it as the imagination network. And this is when you're not focused on a specific task. It's like you're folding laundry, your brain just sort of goes. You don't need to think about what you're actually doing. And when you do that, the default mode, actually, this is the place where you do your most original thinking. You do problem solving. You do something that I had never heard of called autobiographical planning. This is where you look back at your life, you sort of take note of the highs and the lows, you build a personal narrative, and then you look forward to goals. What are you going to do next? You do something that psychologists refer to as you have prospective bias. You think into the future, and then you map it out. How are you going to reach that? So, extremely important things, theory of mind, development of self, creativity, original thinking. I don't want to lose out on those things. And you can't tap that brain power, though, if you are focused on tapping your phone or your other gadgets.
Lead us through the program that you did, the week-long initial program.
I've changed it a little bit for the book because we, realized some things worked better than others and, we were able to look at the data set. But during that first week, we actually partnered with two apps, which is kind of ironic, but I kind of feel like you have to meet people where they are. So, and we wanted to have data, People, that's what people want these days. They want to quantify themselves. So for iOS, it was Moment, and for Android, it was Break Free. And actually, Moment has built the Bored and Brilliant program into the app consequently. So you can do the entire program within the app. And the idea was that through the week, let the app measure how much time you're spending on your phone and how many pickups you have a day, the quick peek that we all do when we get in an elevator or whatever. And then, so the first thing that we asked people to do was, get a baseline. Where are you in this whole situation? Is it as bad as you think? Is it worse than maybe you think? And I think what we realized is we asked people to take a guess. How many times a day do you think you're picking up your phone? And I was like, I don't know, maybe like 30 times. That seems like a lot. Oh, no, I was picking it up 90 to 100 times a day. Wow. And I think what we realize, and we explore this in the book, is the physical reflex that checking our phone has become, that we don't even know we're doing it. And we're not looking for anything in particular. Suddenly you find yourself staring. That's happened to me. It happened to me this morning. I'm like, wait, I'm looking at my phone. What was I looking for? I can't remember. Anyway, so you start with the baseline, and then that's when every day we asked you to try a very small behavior tweak. See what happens. No judgment. We're not promising it's going to work for you, but give it a try to see what life is like. So the first one is to keep your phone off your body while you're in transit. The idea being like, stick it in your bag. Don't have it buzzing at you. See what it's like to ride the bus without looking at your phone the whole way. And people always think that one's going to be super easy. And actually, it's surprisingly difficult because—
What about listening to podcasts? Can you do that?
I love that we both all make podcasts here and they pay our bills, I got to say, maybe take a break because when you're listening to a podcast, you are focusing on—
You took a break from podcasts. You went back?
Yeah, and I've slipped right back because it was – I couldn't bear it.
I can't bear it. When you told me she was trying to not listen to podcasts walking around New York, and we always say, New York is this very special situation, but I think I'm just now too sensitive to sound outside of my insulated podcast world. So when I try to walk around New York without podcasts, I feel twitchy and scared and there's just too much stimulus.
Going on.
Yeah.
Well, and I think the fact that you've noticed that is really kind of wonderful. I think that's what we're not doing is I won't speak for you, but from what I'm hearing from my listeners and my readers is this idea that we've become sort of detached in a way from our own experience of moving through the world. And so the idea of observing your own behavior and then thinking wait, do I feel good when I do this? Do I not feel good with this? Why do you feel overwhelmed and scared by all of these sounds? Is maybe it's okay that you're being in podcast world, or maybe you're I live in New York City. I need to be okay with walking around without headphones on. No judgment. But whatever you – I think that's the idea is that we've become – all of our gadgets, as you well know, are so personalized to us – that we've gotten to the point where we allow, you know, I just did my iOS upgrade this morning and it was like, we have made it souped up and better for you. And I'm like, yeah, but you didn't ask me what I wanted. You didn't ask me if, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's
right.
Like, if we don't make the decisions about how to use the technology and the companies decide for us. Mm-hmm. And there's a sense, I think, that we've lost some autonomy and we've kind of become okay letting them make choices for us,
yeah,
which I don't think is great.
Mm-hmm. So back to the challenge.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So I'll give you a couple examples. So one of them is keeping it off your body in transit. And of course, in the book, we go into the research behind what the physical connection is, the sort of attachment that we start to have, phenomena. Like you think it's your phone buzzing. This has happened to me. Mm-hmm. But actually, it's my stomach growling, but mm-hmm. I'm so out of touch with
that
my
happens
own.
To me all the time.
I mean, but remember when you first got a phone
yeah.
and like it, you'd think it was like yeah. it was your stomach, but it was your phone? Like,
the first
you know
time
what
my
I mean?
Phone buzzed, I actually jumped out of my skin. I was like, it felt like there was like a live cricket in my bag and it's terrified.
Right.
Me.
But
like,
now you're like,
now I'm
oh.
like, oh, what's that?
And yeah. then you're like, oh no, it's lunch
it's
time. So that, and then day two, we ask you to take no photos. This is particularly difficult for people under the age of 40, mm-hmm. we have found, because, you know, Snapchat, Instagram, people communicate via photos now, and asking them to simply communicate a different way makes them start to think, like, what, how am I using photos in my life? Is this a productive way to talk to my friends and family? I mean, we also go into the research. What happens to your memory when you take a photo of something? And there's a really interesting study that a woman, Professor Linda Henkel, did, where she tracked what people remembered after they visited a museum and took photos of all the things that they saw. They remembered very little because they were quite literally outsourcing their brain to their camera. But, you know, we also have some good news is there's a way to use photography to improve your memory. Using the macro function on your phone, zeroing in on a detail makes you have to think about what you're seeing, composing a shot, and then taking that picture actually improves your memory. So I think what's so interesting to me, and very life hackery, is these tiny little tweaks and ways that we, you know, I love my phone. I love my technology. This is not a detox. This is just about using it a little bit better so it feels good and productive for you. So your phone and your gadgets are the tools that they are meant to be, not the taskmasters that they have become for so many of us.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
I've had a meditation practice for a while, but it's been falling off recently, and I find myself spending more and more time on my phone mm-hmm. as a way of like taking refuge from the world and
yes.
not having to
mm-hmm.
calm down, not having to think. I'm
escapism,
on all the time.
Definitely.
And actually sitting and meditating and just sitting with your thoughts is not as simple as it sounds. The stuff that you're describing, like not having your phone on you while you're in transit or within reach while you're in transit, that seems like an incremental step that is much easier than actually sitting down and setting aside time to specifically be there with your thoughts.
And I think what you're describing surprised me, actually, though, because for me, this was about, you know, I'm all about productivity. But what I heard from so many people was this sense of fear. And I think particularly for teenagers, one girl, I think she was about 14 or 15 at one of the book tours, she came with her mom to the bookstore and she raised her hand and she was like, I'm scared to do this. I don't really know what it's like to be alone. I don't want to. And you know, that is so interesting to me. You're an adult. You're okay with yourself. And you remember what it was like to be mm-hmm. okay. Some of these younger folks, like teenagers in particular, have never experienced a world post-puberty where they have spent time alone. And they don't know what basic things like boredom or solitude feel like, because the minute they go into that scary place where they might have to think about things that make them uncomfortable, they have their phone at the ready. She's like, I'm worried about being lonely. And I was like, yeah, you might be. And that's okay. Yeah. You're a human being. Humans get lonely. But, you know, the only person you really can rely on in this world, who you're going to be hanging out with for the rest of your life, is yourself. So you might as well get to know yourself a little bit better. And she genuinely looked terrified. But I also heard from a lot of college kids and teenagers who said, like, schoolwork was much easier during this week. And I actually got my thesis done. There's just a sense that I think they'd also not experienced working on something academic or social without interruption. And they were amazed and joyful at the amount of brain power they didn't even know they had, because that's the key. The constant interruptions, it's a problem for us. By some measurements, we interrupt ourselves, if we're at work, 566 times a day, switching tasks. And so as you know, the problem is, in order to do the deep work, you need to have one thought that leads to another thought, and then be like, okay, well, that's kind of mediocre. How do I dig deeper? How do I dig deeper? How do I dig deeper? But I think it's become a reflex that you have a thought and you feel the need to share it with everybody, right? Mm-hmm. But so what I'm trying to say is, like, no, most of your thoughts are maybe kind of mediocre. Maybe, like, kick it up a notch before you decide to post it on Twitter or Facebook or whatever. And in light of that, that brings me back to one of the other challenges, which was called delete that app. So this is one day where we ask you to take the app that is kind of driving you bonkers bananas, and for a lot of people, it's social media, just take it off your phone. We're not saying quit. We're just saying take it off your phone so that you don't have that constant wanting to check of the notifications and the, oh, I had a thought, let me post it. No. For some people, this completely changed their relationship with the platforms, that they decided that they were only going to do Facebook, you know, purposefully on their laptop with a keyboard and, like, for, you know, 20 to 30 minutes a day, and then that's it. It wasn't going to be something that they were almost like they were living a double life, like they were living their life, but then they were also checking on Facebook, checking on Facebook, checking on Facebook. Facebook was the big one that people had issues with.
I can see people, like, I know people who seem to use Facebook like it's their brain.
Yes.
Like, every thought they have has to go out there. Everything they see, there has to be a picture of it shared. And my problem on Facebook is I just read those people and get mad at them,
doesn't seem very productive.
That's not
either,
much
right?
healthier. You know, no. I'm like judging them, but not, mm-hmm. but I'm spending a lot of my time judging them.
I feel like people are spending so much time managing this alternate persona that they have online that their actual, like, IRL personas personae are suffering, that people aren't as interesting, or they're saving, you know, their bon mot for Twitter, or they're not, like, fully engaging in the moment because they're having sort of this meta discussion about how they're going to present it elsewhere with you.
So last night I was checking Twitter and there was somebody who tweeted, like, does anybody else go home at night and tell their partner about the amazing tweet that they wrote that day? And I was like, that says it all right there, really. But I think what you're talking about is the sense of validation. Like, Pixar, it didn't happen. Yeah. And not only, like, the posting to get the likes, but also the looking at other people to validate that, like, what you're doing is cooler or better, too. I mean, that's, as we're starting to hear from some of the research, the levels of depression and anxiety that are going up, particularly among younger women, are quite shocking. I mean, that's one of the stories that I kept hearing over and over again, is I don't like myself when I'm on those platforms.
Yeah, I deleted Facebook and Twitter from my phone, but now I check them on the browser.
Like the Chrome app on your phone? Yeah,
but I've done that. Okay. I think that's okay, because I think of it as like a mental speed bump. Mm-hmm. Like, because I'm sure there are moments where you're like, I really want to check. Oh, I have to go on the browser. I don't think I have a good Wi-Fi connection. All right, you know what? I'll just check it later.
Right?
Like, so you have to think, like, do I really want to do this right now? No, not that much.
What's your app? What did you
buy? I had a game. I have a game that Two Dots. Do you play Two Dots?
No, I don't play Two Dots. I mean, I know because I read the book about Two Dots. Is Two Dots the same as Dots?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
I deleted it. I took it off. I took it off my phone because it was bad.
And you know, for those of you who don't know, listeners, Two Dots, it's like Candy Crush, but like more beautiful kind of, right? Mm-hmm. It's like
I play Candy Crush.
Do you?
Yeah.
I hate Candy Crush. Yeah,
see,
it's too
I
ugly.
Thought I did too. Exactly. I used to play Dots and I would see people playing Candy Crush when it was at its height, and I would think, that's so tacky, that's so ugly, I don't need that. I'm nurturing my aesthetic self by playing Dots because it's so beautiful.
Yeah, bullshitting your aesthetic self, right?
I feel like when people used to smoke, I would try to smoke and think like, well, it didn't take, I didn't enjoy it, I should try it again to see if I like it.
Uh-huh.
That's how it was with Candy Crush for me. I looked at it. I was like, no, not for me. But like, I want to know what it feels like.
I'll just do it once.
I understand addiction. It's been years. I'm admitting it because you're here, and I'm admitting it because it's not really that shameful.
But so let me ask you though, like, what does using it look like? Jonesing for it? Like,
what it looks like is completely checking out.
Yeah.
Like, just completely checking out of thinking about anything that matters.
And when do you do it? Do you notice?
I do it when I'm on the subway.
Uh-huh. Definitely.
Listen to podcasts, play the game.
Yeah.
I do it while I'm watching TV. If I'm watching TV, I can't just sit and watch the television. Yeah. I have to do it while I'm watching TV. That's pretty much it. I don't like do it in bed or do it instead of reading.
I don't like do it in bed.
No, I don't do it in bed. But anyway, you with Two Dots.
Yeah. So, I mean, like what you're describing is kind of like, you know, instead of a glass of wine, right?
Mm-hmm.
For me, or, you know, not doing the more relaxing and productive meditation or just lying on the ground and thinking through the day. It's like doing a bong hit kind of is what it feels like to me.
Yeah.
And I convinced myself that I was actually improving my spatial understanding.
Mm-hmm.
But I spoke to Dr. Zach Hambrick at the University of Michigan, who was like, no, as far as we know, according to the research so far, you know, maybe they'll unlock a section of my brain. But for now, they believe that all you're doing is getting better at Candy Crush or Two Dots. You're not getting better at like spatially understanding how things move. It's the reason why Lumosity had to pay that huge fine because it was making claims that it was improving people's intelligence. And it's not. It was making them better at doing Lumosity games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, look, is that better than getting drunk all day and you're playing Lumosity games? Of course. But for me, it was like I slide fast back into my Two Dots world. I went cold turkey. I deleted it. I nearly cried. And then I was talking to, do you guys know Dr. Jane McGonigal?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So Jane McGonigal is a futurist. I feel like everybody uses that title now. It's a good title. But she's also a game developer, and she's at the Institute for the Future in Palo Alto. So I was talking to her about it. And of course, you know, she's all about using games for good in your life. So for her, she developed a game to help her get through rehab when she had a terrible concussion. And so she said to me, she was like, you know, the concept of addiction is really changing now. I don't think you're addicted. I think you're just, you know, your brain has gotten hooked on something because it likes the way it feels. So why don't you try to use it for 5 minutes a day? Because you're using it at transition points. Like, I'm coming back from work, I'm super stressed, got to take care of the kids. It's like my little treat to myself as I transition from my one job to another job, right? Mm-hmm. And she's like, that's fine. Why don't you think of it as your like 5 minute transition? And then I told her I had to take this really long flight to Australia and I was terrified because I hate flying. She was like, so don't drink your way to Australia, play your game. It's okay. Like, they're now studying, you know, when kids have to go into an emergency room or they're preparing for surgery, giving kids games because there are appropriate times to distract yourself from irrational fears or anxiety that you might be having. There are also new studies looking at how you can use games to deal with more fatal addictions like smoking or people who are trying to lose weight, playing a game for 10 minutes to change a craving. So I think, you know, I love that perspective that she has, that you can look at something that's making you crazy, but actually there are ways to use it in a productive sort of way. So now when I fly, I'm allowed to play my games and I don't dread flying anymore because I get a treat.
Yeah.
I should add that like there's a I interviewed the designer of Two Dots. Like, for me, this is about understanding what's going on in the user's brain as the people making the technology. And it's shocking to me, and you know, he didn't deny this, that they can see, you know, 1.3 people got stuck on level 47. They have so much interesting data about our behavior, and they can change the color of one of the dots or make it bounce a little more, mm-hmm. and they can see how a million of us react to it. And I just feel like if there was more of a conversation going on with designers and this sort of more sort of productive way that we can use these things, you know, maybe there's only one guy, Nir Eyal, I don't know if you know him, he's a digital marketer. He wrote a book called Hooked, which basically teaches technologists how to design these things to get us to play them as long as we possibly can, to come back over and over again. Because, of course, we pay. They're free, right? But we pay for them with our eyeballs. You can't pay for Facebook if you want to, you know? It wants your behavior, your data. And that's what it sells. That is the business model. And I feel like inherently there's an injustice there because we didn't get to choose.
Mm-hmm. We've talked a lot about, you know, Tristan Harris.
Yes, Tristan is in the book and a friend.
Okay.
And for those of you who don't know, he has he was at Google and acted as sort of a design ethicist there. And he now has Time Well Spent is the name of his group, which is this idea of, if you guys had him on?
No, we didn't have him on.
Oh, okay.
I think I saw him on 60 Minutes, I and all other grandparents watched.
There's a whole lab at Stanford that teaches students how to apply persuasive psychology principles into technology to persuade people to use products in a certain way. So it's not about giving you all this freedom. It's about sucking you in to take your time.
We talked about him, too, with Robert Lustig.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah. I love Robert Lustig.
Yeah,
sure.
We love him, too.
Yeah, so Tristan and I, like, Tristan's been on the show a bunch of times, and he's definitely in the book because he's one of the few people, I think, who's really thinking about, you know, what would it look like if there was a Google Docs version that not everybody could collaborate? Or maybe you had a button that said, I'm deep into this document right now. Can you leave me alone so I can get on with it? And so that's one of my, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Our podcast runs on Google Docs, mm-hmm. basically. And when my producers jump into a script when I'm in the middle of writing it, it drives me bananas. Yeah. Like, what if there was like a pause button or something? Mm-hmm. What if there were ways that we could communicate a little better?
Mm-hmm.
I think there is a design movement, small one, but it is sort of percolating.
I don't think people really want to hear it. You know, I feel like these people are in the news and they are writing books and they are starting these organizations. Mm. But I think that they're still easy to ignore. Tristan Harris, he recommended turning your phone to black and white, to grayscale instead of color, and in order to sort of try to break the addiction. And that was really helpful for me.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. I don't remember hearing that. That is really interesting,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah, I mean, Two Dots becomes impossible. Candy Crush becomes impossible.
That
and everything
true.
You're looking at becomes less interesting. And then when you turn the color back on, you can't believe sort
so
of the carnival that you're
vulgar.
Exactly. Totally vulgar.
Vulgar carnival.
Yes. Crass. So I like that as a, you know, a half measure for trying to unaddict yourself.
Yeah, I really like that. Just making it like somehow a little bit less real.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
So can we talk a little bit about Slack? Because
can we please talk a little bit about Slack?
I feel like Slack. I love Slack. We use Slack at work.
How do you guys use it?
We use it a lot.
For everything.
For everything.
Our whole workflow goes through Slack. Uh-huh. So, you know, our editorial process, you know, people have editorial calendars. We use other software, but really Slack is sort of the engine that runs everything for our New York team and our remote team.
And the best thing about Slack is, before we talk about the bad stuff, what is the best thing? That it's cut down on how many emails you get a day.
Huge.
That's the best
with emails
thing.
Yes. And instant communication, and you can clear things up right away with other people, and you can get small groups of people together, and it's just so fluid and feels immediate. And there's lots of great.
It allows us to stay in very close touch with people who don't work in our office.
Okay. So
and also enables us to have conversations when we're in an open office and you can't necessarily talk about certain things.
Yeah.
You can easily check in with somebody and, you know, instead of taking them aside, which feels more dramatic and, you know, strange.
Right. What's the downside?
The downside is you're constantly being distracted, right? You're constantly being pulled off of whatever it is you're working on by some immediate need or some... may not even be immediate, but because it's on Slack, there's this perception that, like, I need to get to this thing right away because this person just pinged me. They know I'm online because of the way Slack is designed. It's, you know, it's obvious when you're there.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I've had the experience of Slacking somebody else and they don't get back to me. And I'm like, I know you're there.
Right.
Yeah.
So can I just say, like, on the book tour for Bored and Brilliant, the top two topics that came up were parenting, kids, you know, workplace burnout, not because people are working long hours, but because of the ping, 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 ping. Mm-hmm. It just is driving people bananas to the point where I went to give my little talk, my little spiel at the Google campus in Kirkland, Washington. And I was, you know, I'm pretty tough on the tech companies in my talk that I give. And I was sort of waiting for the blowback afterwards. What did all the software engineers want to talk about? How to preserve their brains and quiet time and deep work, because the pinging is driving them crazy too.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, software engineers, they're just like us, you know? I think it's driving people insane. And to me, my theory is that we've confused two things. We've confused productivity with reactivity. We think that because we're always available and always responding, and every free moment we have is a chance to be a responsive coworker or update someone on what you're doing or just give them a status, you know, I'm in the doc, you know, whatever, that we're constantly, we're almost like narrating our lives to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what, people? There's things your colleagues do not need to know, or they don't need to be part of what is actually your thought process that you're sharing with them. You're not sharing an idea. You're sharing your thought process. Wait till you get to the good part and then share it with them. And I think, you know, there was something sort of great when you had to write it all up in one single email a day. And people weren't doing that. They were sending emails all day long, which is how we got to Slack, basically, right? And this comes back to the idea that I certainly was not the person to come up with, but batching, right?
Yeah.
And Slack does not allow you to batch. I'm sure you guys have talked about batching. You know, this idea of like you wait till, you know, at 11 o'clock and 3 p.m., those are your 2 half hours for dealing with email. But Slack doesn't let you do that. It's just always there. I don't know. What have you guys talked about this? Have you tried to troubleshoot it?
I don't think we've talked about it too much. I think it's a conversation I'd love to have with the team and see how everybody's doing. Something that gets me about Slack and about all forms of communication online is that you have to download add-ons and customize, say, your Gmail in order to be in control of when your messages send.
Yeah, technology to help you with your technology.
Exactly. And so I evangelize about Boomerang for Gmail.
Oh, yeah, do you? I hear people really do love Boomerang.
Right, and what Boomerang does is simply let you schedule when an email is going to send, and it also will bring an email back to your inbox if people don't respond, or if you just want a reminder 6 months from now to check on a certain something, you can schedule an email to return. And for somebody like me who's always keeping lists and always worried that I'm going to drop one of my balls, it's really, really helpful. And for somebody who doesn't want to be annoying in the middle of the night sending an email to a coworker when something comes to me and certainly isn't going to send a Slack because that's going to give somebody, you know,
anxiety,
a notification on their phone.
Well, first of all, they should be snoozing their Slack.
They should be snoozing their Slack. It's true. But, you know, even I check my Slack even in the off hours. And if somebody has written to me, I will probably respond if I'm available. And Slack doesn't have a Boomerang function. And there is there's a program that I'm testing called Schedule.io, which is not
great.
Oh,
yeah, I've heard about not great.
No, it's not great because it's not an app that you can use within Slack. You have to go to their website. You also have to give them access to your Slack.
No,
all of
I'm
this
not doing
is,
all that, yeah.
You know, you're giving people access to your information, which is scary, but another conversation. But the fact that Slack doesn't let you time when you send messages seems to me like a real flaw with the system, considering that the volume of communiques that we get over the course of a day is so massive, so, we should be able to control the flow a little bit.
So, like, when are you actually doing the work? Because you could be just answering Slack all day long, right?
Yeah.
You totally could.
Yeah.
And yet, sometimes I get this weird panic when there's no Slacks for me because you get sort of addicted to it.
Yes.
It's fun. It's very, it's.
Well, also, it
feels
means
like
that you're a relevant person in the world
like
and you're needed.
Yeah.
And you're checking things off a list constantly. Mm-hmm. Like every time you answer a Slack, you check off a tiny thing on your to do list.
Mm-hmm.
And so you get that satisfaction too.
Yeah.
Well, okay. So I'm debating what research to get into here. So, Boston Consulting Group. A couple years ago, did a study with a Harvard researcher where they were having a real problem with retention because people were burning out. So they tried to do a thing where they created these teams within the office, and there was a rotation that people had to take a day off. And the day off had to be cooking, exercising, hanging out with your family. It was assigned to them. And the idea being that there was always a member who was covering for the member who was off. And they just wanted to see if, like, building consistent time off into their schedule would make people not only more efficient, but not leave the company because retention, you know, that costs money every time they need to hire somebody new. I will say that, like, BCG had extreme success with this from what I understand. And I've sort of taken it. I don't think we can all do that, but I turned it into one of the challenges in the book, which is taking a fakecation. And this is where, and you know, I don't know if it will work with Slack. This is a good question. Mm. Where you say, out of office reply, we all put them up when we go on vacation, but you know, from 2 to 4 today, I am working on X and I'm not available, but I'll get back to you as soon as I'm back online. Or if you feel like your boss won't allow you to do that, that you're like, oh, I ate something for lunch that did not agree with me. I'm off. You know, whatever you need to say to carve out that time where you finish that report, where you edit that video, where you actually get it done and you allow yourself to, you know, have creative moments that take time. They take time. You cannot make your best work if you're doing it in between answering Slack. It just is not possible.
Yeah.
Can you put an away message on Slack?
You can't.
You can't. They sort of bury it.
You can put it like as your status almost.
Yeah.
It's like a little.
But
yeah.
People can still Slack you.
They can still Slack you.
And you are still.
Snooze.
Yeah. You can snooze. Yeah, you can snooze notifications. Yeah. I mean, it's not like you're forced to be on it like an IV or something, but it's really hard to walk away.
But I think part of it also is resetting the expectations. And I think that was what was so powerful about the BCG thing, right? Is that they were saying to each other, no one was saying, but I pinged you and you didn't respond. They knew she's not available. This person is covering for her. There was no miscommunication. Everybody knew what was going on and they knew why they were doing it. So that's what I wonder is I think it has to be a team thing that happens. And I'm hearing from a lot of corporations who are using Bored and Brilliant to reset the expectations in their team for it not to be this constant sort of passive aggressive, like, oh, I slacked her and she didn't get back to me. Like, that's annoying, right? Like, but if you set the expectations, like maybe once a week from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m., there's no slacking. It's 1 hour in the week. Maybe you just try it, like a group experiment. That would be fascinating to see what happens.
I think that would be quite doable. I mean,
I bet you what you're going to see is you're going to see less slacks the rest of the week. I'm telling you, the love hate is strong.
Yeah.
Across the country.
It also, like, we have fun channels. You know, we have like. Dog
I'm sorry. There's no time in
channels.
My life for the fun channels anymore. There's just not.
Them.
I can't. I'm such a like, okay, maybe once in a while, but like I can't. It becomes a thing.
I have the fun channels muted. I can't be notified every time there's a post in the dog channel.
Yeah.
That kind of distraction.
Like, you know, there's always like one, like, oh, I'm going to sound like such an old lady, but like there's always one person here like, dude, like, come on, man, I gotta go pick up my kids, you know? Yeah. Like, you're really funny, but like, you don't need to prove it to me all day long, you know? You don't have to respond to everything with a quip, you know, or a gif, you know? Like, just read it and then keep it to yourself.
Right.
Is that mean? Am I a horrible old lady?
No, I think everybody thinks that.
That's me on Facebook. You're describing, that's exactly what I'm doing on Facebook.
But if we're all feeling it, then like, come on. Can he go home and make dinner for my kids? That's what I want to know. Because then I'll play all day long with you, buddy. Sorry.
No, I think that people see those fun Slack channels as an outlet or a diversion away from work. And it seems like they might be on par with the Two Dots or Candy Crush, where
completely.
You're amusing yourself by using more technology.
You know what would be lovely? Go out and buy coffee for everyone and bring it back. Use your 15-minute walk to like chill a little bit or think about something, or, and then buy coffee for all your teammates and bring it back to them. I think they'll appreciate that much more than the meme you just shared.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
What does your tech usage look like now?
I try to be pretty disciplined because I have a lot of goals that I want to reach, and I am very aware of when I start to like slide into chaos. I carry around a loose leaf notebook wherever I go, just because of the research there is that if you take notes on a laptop, you actually are mostly transcribing what people say. You're not actually processing what you say.
Loose leaf, like a binder?
Like a binder. I have it in my notebook.
Like three ring? Like,
no, like a you know, not a three ring. Not loose leaf.
Okay.
Like a notebook.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's a habit I started 20 years ago as a producer at the BBC, and it's really stuck with me. But now there's research that says, you know, when I'm in a meeting taking notes, I don't do it on a laptop. I do it in my thing because, so the idea being that when you are transcribing, you're just writing what the person said. You're not thinking like, oh, okay, so we need to have that done by, okay. And I, you know, I'll do little arrows and that's actually you sort of processing what the person said and putting it into your own language and taking it into your brain as opposed to blah, 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 blah.
I'm assuming your handwriting hasn't atrophied as mine has over the past 20
years.
Oh, it's
pretty bad. But I remember things better when I write it down.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so then Todoist is my to-do list app. What do you guys use for to-do lists?
I use Wunderlist.
I tried Wunderlist. It didn't have enough bells and whistles for me.
Okay, yeah, it depends on what you want. I just use Bear, which is like a stripped-down Evernote, and just make my own to-do list.
Okay, so my to-do list is also based on research with Dr. Daniel Levitin, who's a neuroscientist who wrote The Organized Mind, and his best advice on how to write a to-do list that does the work for your brain is to write down absolutely everything so you're not carrying a mental load with you, right? Because your brain can only hold 4 to 5 things at once. So if you're like, oh, I have to remember to pick up, you know, bread for the kids' lunch and I need to remind Jen that I'm not going to be here on Thursday, all those things, your brain is taking space to remember all of those. So you just write it all down. But then the key is to prioritize it, which is why I like Todoist because it has red, orange, yellow, like, you know, and it rises to the top, the red ones.
Okay.
And then to schedule it so you can choose which day. Anytime that I have a, like, wait, what am I supposed to be doing? I just look there and it tells me the next thing I'm supposed to be doing. So I don't have to be like, wait, should I do that? Maybe I should do it. No, it's all there. Off you go. No more choices to make. Because as he said, like, you know, every morning, this is a fascinating fact to me, every morning we wake up with a finite amount of glucose. And every decision we make burns some glucose, which, you know, if you're waking up and you're like, I have 5 Slacks that I need to respond to, and you know what, I'm going to tell him that later. I'll deal with that one tomorrow. I got to get back to him. Like, it's 9 a.m. and you've already like made five decisions and burned through glucose. And that explains why so many of us at night are trying to escape and we're pawing at our, you know, screens and scrolling and scrolling and not even really getting anything out of them. We're taking in information without even processing it. And we're tired, we're exhausted. Yeah. And, you know, our computers are infinite, but our brain power, sadly, is not. So Todoist is big for me.
Yeah.
And I use Pocket. Do you guys use mm-hmm. Pocket?
Oh, yeah.
Basically, you, what do you call it? An extension, I guess?
An app.
An app.
Yeah.
Okay. So when you put it in Pocket, it saves an article for you to read later. It makes it really beautifully spaced and the layout is gorgeous.
Strips
all the ads.
Ads
are gone and you can read it offline too. So for me, who's like, I'm a voracious reader, but I can't, you know, stop and read everything at the same time. I'm just constantly throwing articles into Pocket to read later.
They have a browser extension that's
yes,
very
they have
reliable.
A browser extension, yeah. Which is great. It's a little bit of a pain to set it up everywhere, but once you have it set up, you're like ready to go. I got that at the end of the year. I got an email. They're like, you're in the top 1% of Pocket users or Pocket readers, they said. And
okay,
I was like, well, users maybe, readers, I don't know how many of them.
How do they know how much you're reading?
Yeah, exactly. I think that's more aspirational on my part.
Right.
But I have issues with Pocket.
What are your issues?
I really, really, really want folders. I know some people live by tagging, but visually it doesn't work for me.
So, yeah, that's a user experience problem because a folder is just a tag, you know? So
I know,
so you
but
have
like,
to yeah, no, I know what you're
want
saying.
The,
I
you
want
to
organize.
Sh- yep. Sh-
and I
yes.
want them out.
So you don't have to see them.
Yes.
Yes, this is my problem with the Kindle because their folders are essentially tags, so you can put something in a folder but it doesn't go away and get hidden into the folder. It's still available, but if you go into the folder it's listed there.
So that's a UX thing?
Yes.
Okay, that's interesting because I've said that to people and they're like, "What the hell are you talking about? It's just tags. It's the same thing." I'm like, "No, but visually
no, it's a visual thing.
I need to like know that I have looked at it, decided what it's about, and then put it somewhere. And then when I'm ready to look at all my articles about women in tech, they're
right.
all waiting for me. You know, for me, I tried to use Evernote and I just
it's a bloated mess.
Yeah. I can't and is it still around?
It is still around. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been talking about this constantly. I just switched from Evernote to another
To
Bear.
This is the thing you're talking about.
This is the thing.
And should I try it?
Alice made the switch too.
Love.
So did you write something about this, Melissa?
What?
Did you write something about Bear?
No, I did not write something about Bear.
Okay.
I used it as
I need to read that.
No, there is a great.
Just stick it in my pocket.
There is a great post about Bear, about switching from Evernote to Bear on Lifehacker. And it doesn't take into account all of the things that I think of as Bear's deficiencies, but I think that that's a very personal thing.
Yeah. So it's basically a note-taking app. So all of my notes now live on Bear. I used to have like an assortment of text edit documents that are just like all over my desktop, which was just a huge mess. And it organizes by tag also. So you may not be crazy about that, but you can kind of cross-link things. Mm-hmm. And I find it to be really, really nice.
One thing that I haven't used on Pocket is the social feature, which I think I might really like.
I have a huge following on Pocket.
What?
I have
follow you.
Like 300.
Oh, so
no.
Can we see what you've...
I have to recommend it. It doesn't let you see my reading list, which
Fair.
I'm glad about
yeah.
because there's some
privacy.
That nobody needs to know. But I have 250,000 followers on Pocket.
That's a
like
lot of
insane.
Followers.
But I think because I was one of the
yes.
top users,
right.
they, you know.
They recommend you.
Yeah. But yeah. I mean, I'm not sure if they're real people.
Okay.
Right.
I like the idea of being able to see what other people are reading.
Yes.
But
I love the Pocket email that I get every day. Do you get that?
I don't get it.
Recommended reads.
Okay. And are they recommended for you?
For me.
Okay.
Which is a little filter bubbly,
yeah.
you know, echo chambery.
Right.
But consistently, I'm like, oh, I did miss that article. I should read that.
Because
they're in my wheelhouse, right? Like, it's usually about tech, women, parenting, neuroscience, health. Those are my, like, you know.
Yeah. Right.
right.
It's a magazine just for you.
It's a magazine just for me. Exactly. But I'm also, like, a newsletter junkie.
What newsletters are you into?
Oh, I read them all. Our newsletter actually is great, by the way. The Note to Self newsletter is fantastic.
We'll link to that in the show notes.
Yeah, I read the Axios newsletters, which I'm really enjoying, actually. Mm-hmm. I read the tech one, the working one, the media one, and the daily one.
That's a lot of Axios newsletters.
It is, and it's interesting because I'm now getting a sense of what their strategy is in terms of cross-editorial content. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of repetition there. Mm-hmm. But whatever. Okay. Good for them.
Yep.
But, you know, when they do dive into an article, it's usually new and different. And they've been very on the whole tech being called to speak to its responsibility to Americans. And they've been very on the story of the final convergence of the government for once getting that tech has a huge impact on how we live and vote and the fake news issue. So I've been psyched that they've been on that. I read Brian Stelter's CNN Media.
Reliable sources.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I read that. Quartzy. Mm-hmm. I really like Quartzy. It's from Quartz. Mm-hmm. It's a Friday one, kind of very cool and hip lifestyle-y.
Okay.
Like very design and art and architecture and... It's great. Mm.
So how does unplugging affect creativity?
Yes, that is actually in the title of the book, right? Okay, so think of it this way. You're spending that moment in line for coffee, and instead of checking your email, you're letting your brain space out. What you're doing is you're activating the default mode, right? You're getting bored. It acts as a gateway to mind wandering, to daydreaming, to taking two ideas that you might have had and then smashing them together to create something new. And so what we heard from people was by building that, making sure that they included that in their day consistently, they solved issues with people at work that maybe had been plaguing them. They came up with new business ideas, but it was also simpler things. I mean, I think we need to define creativity a little bit more broadly. They came up with an idea for the leftovers in their refrigerator, and they made something yummy and delicious that their family enjoyed. Mm. That is creativity. It's that little sprinkle of glitter over your life when things are less flat. Maybe they're not as bright as what's coming out of your phone, but you know, we can be more special every single day by making sure that we have time to think about what's important to us, to make it just a little bit better, sort of upgrade our lives instead of just our apps, I guess.
So now it's time for Upgrade of the Week. Every week, we talk about that one little thing that's making a big difference in our lives. Melissa, what's your upgrade this week?
I started using an app that I feel like everybody else has been using for a long time, and I didn't understand it until we wrote about it on Lifehacker. And that app is Nuzzle, N-U-Z-Z-E-L. Mm. I think it's particularly apt this week since we're talking about ways to stop using the apps that we're addicted to. What it does is it aggregates all of the stories that your friends have tweeted and gives them to you in one place. So instead of getting all the crap on Twitter, you get all the links, and they're ranked by how many people tweeted them. So the most popular stories in your feed are at the top, and then you can, if you want to continue scrolling down, you can see the things that just one person has tweeted about, the links that one person has tweeted. You can sort it by time. So, you know, in the last 24 hours, in the last hour, I find myself checking it a lot to the point where it may replace Twitter and become an addictive thing.
Interesting. Wow.
But it seems to me to be pulling the meat out of Twitter and making it so that I don't have to interact so much with the social aspect of it. Huh. So it's more media, less social.
Yeah, I did not know about this. It's kind of blowing my mind right
now. I tried it once a while ago and it didn't work for me, but maybe I'll try again.
You might try it now. I find that now that I am so addicted to news and so obsessed with the news cycle and having a very difficult time, upgrade listeners, if you have any recommendations for a breaking news alert app, I'm using the New York Times breaking news through Safari, but it's not... it's not giving me enough.
Okay. So not enough.
Not enough. Yeah, I get one, maybe a couple a week.
Oh, that's my kind of breaking news.
Oh yeah, I need a little bit more. I want to be able to customize it, and I want like desktop notification and not to have a browser open. But anyway, Nuzzle, check it out.
Okay, cool. Manoush, what's your upgrade?
Well, it's kind of tech-based in that I am trying out a meal delivery service for the first time in my life. A little treat to myself in a post-book tour world. I was feeling kind of gross because of all the travel I was doing and all the airport meals. I just wanted to get back on track. And so I'm trying something called Euphebe, E-U-P-H-E-B-E. I think it's available where most startups are in the world, or in the country, I should say. And it comes with an app, actually, so that she will coach you. Like, there's a coach feature. So it's mostly vegan, but she's, you know, I have half and half in my coffee sitting right here right now, so that's fine. And the idea is to just, like, you know, not have it be like, oh, man, I'm hungry. What am I going to eat? Oh, I'll just have some kettle corn and then I'll figure it out. No, there's a delicious, healthy, usually bean and vegetable meal waiting for me. And it's low environmental impact because they're frozen and they're very small, the meals, and they have been delicious and very filling. I haven't, like, you know, lost the bloat yet, but I'm working on it. And it's just nice to know that, like, I have noticed that my energy has been more even throughout the day because I'm eating real food at regular times and trying not to, like, have three Kind bars be lunch, which is kind of gross and what I was doing on the road.
Right. And you were talking about the cost of decision-making. It just takes that out.
Exactly. Kind of nice. I don't need to think. I'm hungry. There's my delicious quinoa salad with kale and white beans and whatever. The food's really good.
Wow. All right. I have to try it. Alice, what's your upgrade? So I downloaded a calorie counter app.
Which one?
It's called MyFitnessPal.
I love MyFitnessPal. Right?
Lifehacker's favorite.
It is my... I think that's what's probably why I downloaded it, actually, probably from Lifehacker's recommendation. I'm really enjoying it. I didn't think that I would be into the calorie counter idea, but it's sort of, even more than the calories, it breaks down the nutrition of what you're eating. So it's really made it clear to me, for instance, that I eat too much sugar, like way too much sugar. Even when I think I'm cutting way, way down, there's the things that I like tend to be kind of starchy and sugary. And I had no idea how much sugar was in bananas. I just thought that they're healthy. I could eat.
It could be worse, though.
I mean, so much worse.
Yeah, I have a candy issue. So.
But oh my god, no! But I'm too ashamed to put candy in there, so I have not eaten candy.
Oh, that's great.
I downloaded it because I'm like, I can't write down
10 jelly beans.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. That would be so pathetic, so, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You feel like the app would be like, really?
What are you doing? What are you doing? Be great if it had a little extension that did that. Just like, what are you, Alice?
I have a panic button on my Euphebe app. It's like if you know. Oh my God, I'm about to eat 10 Twizzlers. You can panic. And she'll be like, how about an apple with some nut butter?
Is it actually a human being?
It's actually a human being.
Is she on 24/7?
I guess so. There must be a team of them. I have no idea.
This is amazing.
You're selling us on Euphebe. Yeah.
Well, you know, and I'm sure they're at that point, that startup point where they need to provide an incredible service so that they like can scale, you know? That's when you should sign up for something, I feel like, because you will get the personal service.
It's true. Before they're a case study on startup. You know,
exactly.
Failed.
Oh, God.
Thank you so much.
Oh,
Thank you
guys. This was so fun.
I'm
such a Lifehacker fan. To be here to talk to you about my ways of hacking has been delightful.
Great. And that's our show. I'm not giving up Candy Crush, Alice.
You shouldn't. I think you should keep doing it to the expense of everything else in your life.
I really don't know if I can give up. You know, I feel like it's like with any addiction. They say that if you're not ready, you can't perform an intervention on somebody if they actually don't want to give up the drug, right?
It's got to be your decision.
And I think my decision is to continue avoiding reality and to continue playing Candy Crush. Although I do think about how I'm never going to get to the end, because that's sort of what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to get to the end, and they keep adding more levels.
Where all the candy is crushed?
Once the candy is crushed, I would never go back and play it again, but they are never going to let me out of this. So the ultimate destination is, as with life, the grave. So I'm going to play Candy Crush, and then I'm going to die.
Yeah. Seems like a solid plan.
The Upgrade is produced by Levi Sharp, who's on Twitter, at Levi Sharp. Follow him, and then come find the rest of us. You can find me, at Melissa Kirsch. You can find Alice, at Finn Slippy. You can find Manoush Zomorodi, at Manoush Z. And of course, you can find Lifehacker, at Lifehacker. Our executive director of audio is Mandana Mofidi. Lifehacker's managing editor is Virginia K. Smith.
This episode was mixed by Jamie Colazzo.
Hey, if you want to say hi to us, and look, I don't want to make this a thing between us, but we want you to say hi. We want you to call. We want to hear your voices. And been a little disappointed in you, frankly, because you haven't been...
Right.
You know, we give and we give.
Right.
And what are we getting back?
Last week we threatened to call you, and this week we'll make good on that
promise.
We're
going to do it. So give us a call, if you will. Leave us a voice message at 347-687-8109.
We want to know what you're doing to unplug.
Tell us what you're doing to unplug right now. Or you can shoot us an email at upgrade@lifehacker.com. And you can always find us on Panoply, NPR One, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Follow Lifehacker on Facebook at facebook.com/lifehacker. And you can find show notes for this and every episode of The Upgrade at lifehacker.com/the show.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.